Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, Mr. Gino Barbaro.
The Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast catalogs our journey to becoming financially free through multifamily real estate investing.
Gang, each week we interview a guest specifically chosen for their expertise in and around multifamily real estate.
We talk you through our entire process, every victory and every misstep and everything that we've learned along the way.
What does that look like? Buy right, manage right, and finance right.
The audio podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are found.
Or check us out on our YouTube page where you'll find tons of other great content.
Your visuals resonates for your ideal customer. If your ideal customers are super traditional, you don't want to have a contemporary style.
And is distinctive. Mm-hmm.
And distinctive, right. But just like comedians, right? Comedians have different styles. Most are really foul-mouthed today, but that's not for everybody.
Really?
So what's the style?
Really?
Yeah, you're just a heartbeat away.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the global premier sales and personal development podcast that are more than 100,000 downloads a month strong right now and headed to the moon. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute.
And what the hell's going on? We are going to give you a show today, a tremendous show. Jeffrey Shaw is our guest, author of the best-selling book, Lingo. And I'll tell you, I was blown away by this guy.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Deep, smart, instant response, and the book Lingo isn't what you think it is. It's all about lingo.
Well, it's called Lingo: Discover Your Ideal Customer Secret, and
their secret language.
Right, exactly. I think it is secret language.
It is the customer's secret language.
Exactly.
Okay.
It is a way to understand.
Our sheet was off here.
Yeah.
It's what their real motive is.
It's their real motive. You're trying to find out the why of why your customer wants to buy from you.
Right. And what we want to find out today is, why is it so fucking cold outside?
I don't know. But let me tell you, this morning, I was so bundled up, I looked ridiculous.
Yeah. There's a vortex out there. I don't know what a vortex is, but I've heard that it makes things cold.
I even put coats on the dogs.
Yeah, that was like normal. Here's the thing: like, for anyone that follows Jen on Instagram, and I would suggest you do that.
Yeah.
It's Jen in Any Minute, right?
Yes, that's
Instagram.
It. That's it. Yeah.
So for anyone that follows her on Instagram, she usually has a story of her walking the dogs. It's been so cold, we haven't even gotten any of those.
The dogs don't refuse to go outside. They pee in the hallway.
No, thankfully they do not pee in the hallway. But I cannot say they do not pee inside. It's too cold to hold my phone out there. I have hand warmers on, feet warmers on. It's like crazy.
What a
sissy. And we're in Charlotte.
What a sissy.
All right.
Look, hold on. I don't go out there. I've not really been outside because it is entirely too cold.
Exactly.
So I want to throw a sales question at you diehards this morning, and I want you to go and join our Facebook group.
The official Seller Diehards official Facebook group.
Yeah. Seller Diehard on Facebook. The economy's booming right now. How are you taking full advantage of it, or – are your sales just up, 10 or 15% and you think you had something to do with it?
Yeah. And like, what's going on? Like, it's February. Did you sleep through January? Are you surprised about what you accomplished
in
January or didn't accomplish?
Right.
Like, take some reflection before it's March. Take some reflection right now and think about what did you do well and what needs to change.
And you set that New Year's resolution, but you're still fat.
Oh, Jeffrey.
I am.
Oh, Jeffrey.
Come on now. Let's not be mean, because the one thing.
Okay. You're still overweight. No. You're still big boned.
Yeah. Again, a few of the holiday pounds have not left. That's, again, there's some of us that resemble that mark. It might be me.
I'm down 5, and I erroneously think I had something to do with it.
Oh, man. All right. So, like, before we get into the show, let's read a 5-star review.
All right, cool.
I will read it.
All right, Nada.
It's from iBike.
iBike.
Yes. iBike writes in today, the only thing I can think of better than Jeffrey and Jennifer's books is getting new, relevant, and useful information from them 5 days a week.
Wow. Now you're talking iBike. iBike, we love you. Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much.
So you can go to any one of these review things and review us.
Yeah, just go to iTunes. And click we'll on review. We love reviews. They
you could
keep
be
us
more
going.
Famous than iBike.
Or just as and get mentioned. We will read every 5-star review on the Sell or Die podcast.
Guys, we do this because we genuinely love doing it. Like, this is fun for us to
come
and
the studio.
Heated. it's inside. But your reviews keep us going. So if we're giving you value, post a 5-star review, baby.
Say
do it.
Say something, dude. Say something. So here we go. We're going to get into Jeffrey Shaw. He's going to give insight into figuring out how to learn a customer's secret language. Listen close. Take notes. Before being known as the lingo guy, Jeffrey Shaw was one of the most sought-after photographers in his field. He is the host of the popular business podcast, Creative Warriors, and author of the best-selling book, Lingo, Discover Your Ideal Customer's Secret Language. Diehards, please help me welcome the great Jeffrey Shaw.
Hey, Jeffrey, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here with you guys. This should be interesting, if not fun.
Yeah.
We are glad you're here.
And we are photo diehards ourselves. We not only take them, but we admire them. And I collect guys like Fred Stein, who is an iconic photographer, did the Albert Einstein photo and the Frank Lloyd Wright photo that everyone sees but has no idea who did it. I've met his son who lives in Manhattan still.
Oh, cool.
But before we actually begin the part about what makes you great, I'd like to talk about how you see a photograph before you click the lens.
Well, it's a cool thing that you'd ask that. So first of all, let me qualify. So I did family portraits, families and children on location, very affluent families. All right. So
that's a good niche.
It's a very good niche. And there are clients. I started when I was 20 years old in the 80s. I didn't start that way. The first few years I tried to build this type of business in my hometown of Hopewell Junction, New York, and it was never going to fly there. I was really, you know, just I needed to work with a more affluent clientele who had the discretionary income, not just to afford my services, but what really made a difference was we valued similar things, right? I'm by nature a very long-term planner. That's why I was a photographer, because I believe in preserving moments and handing them down.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, if that's your highest value, you need to find people who can afford that. And people that are struggling to get by month to month, which was the town I grew up in, that's not a possibility. So I needed to find the people that could. So it led me to wanting to serve an affluent clientele who I felt I really understood their priorities and values, and I felt they understood me. And so the way I see a photograph, I love that you asked this, because of course my work now is all in the field of branding. What I continue to unpack as a branding consultant is how much being a photographer influences that. You know, the road to mastery, right? Whether it's 10,000 hours or whatever it is. I, of course, have over 34 years as a photographer. It has honed certain intuitions to me that enables me to help people, businesses with their branding. For example, as a photographer, it is so intuitively based because when you release this, especially when you're photographing people, right? People are in movement. So when I see the photograph, I'm not seeing it with my eyes as much as my body is sensing the photograph, because your brain can't comprehend how fast you're going to release the shutter. The shutter releases at, you know, 125th of a second or 250th of a second. Your brain can't process that. So to know when to see that photograph, it is a gut instinct, intuitive reaction to something that's going in front of you. So that's how I see a photograph, more with my sense than I do my eyes.
That's pretty cool. So you can look at, but there's, I want to talk about two things about photography, then we can move on. One of the best images that has been captured of my youngest daughter is by the photographer at the school who takes pictures when the kids are not looking.
Yeah.
So he captures them sort of in action. And it's incredible what this guy has done. That's number one. Yeah. One of my photographers is a friend of mine here in Charlotte named Mitchell Carney. And there's one word he refuses to say. And the word is smile. Like he'll figure out a way to get you to give you the image that he's looking for, whether it's smile or not. And literally, I've been using one of his images as my master image for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And it was taken as a Polaroid to see how the lighting was.
Hmm. Yeah, it's about relationship, right? I mean, you get back in response to what the environment that you create. And somebody, again, I continue to unpack the similarities between my role as a photographer and as a branding consultant. And someone just the other day suggested to me something I had never considered. As a photographer, I photograph entirely on location, right? So my job really has been to create the environment for the magic to happen. And this other individual, this gentleman, he made the connection to how that's something lacking in businesses and branding is creating the environment, right? And I didn't realize I am masterful at environment creating, because you put me in a studio, I don't know what to do. Like if I walk into a studio and I just see a blank backdrop, it doesn't inspire me. But you could drop me any place in the world and I am confident that I can process the choices, the options, and create a beautiful photograph. So I'm actually, more than anything, I think I'm masterful at environment creation for the magic to happen. And actually that it does have a lot to do with branding and businesses that I hadn't made the connection until someone else pointed it out to me.
Right. That's people see the image is the same as in photograph. You know, they look at the image of the brand and it creates a thought.
Yeah. I gave a talk at the Professional Photographers of America last Monday. It was an audience of 900 plus, about 800 plus people. And it's a group of photographers. So I'm trying to make the connections for them between photography and how they can brand their businesses to attract their ideal customers. And something I said in the talk, which was, you know, if we just, and this is true of life, it's true in branding. And I think it's very true in branding, but it's true as a photographer as well. If you just see what's in front of you, you create a snapshot, right? And in business, that would be equal to a buyer persona or an avatar or a target market. But if you truly see people as a photographer, or if you truly see people, your customers as a business, you can create their portrait, meaning you know much more about them. You know their heart, their feelings, their lifestyle, their priorities, their values. And that is what I think businesses need to know about their ideal customers today in order to really serve them and in order to attract their ideal customers. So again, you know, and that's the difference, I think, between a mediocre photographer and an exceptional photographer is, do they capture just what's in front of them, what they see, or do they capture the depth of the person? And that's a portrait.
So yeah, it's photo versus portrait?
Snapshot versus portrait.
Yeah, it's a snapshot. Like if you just capture what's in front of you, you've got a snapshot. But if you understand and sense the person in front of you, whether it's a subject as a photographer or a customer as a business, if you dive deeper, you can capture their portrait, like what makes them who they are.
Does it also matter where they place things?
Like in what way, the business or the photographer?
What's the setting in the room? What's the ambiance that you're trying to?
Absolutely. Everything tells a story. I mean, I truly believe that part of what made me successful with the affluent clientele, again, I'm talking primarily Northeast affluence.
Yeah, although people that already know everything.
Yeah, it's different than LA affluence, right? Here in Miami, where I am now, you know, it's much showier in LA, Miami, but Northeast affluence, they're pretty dignified for the most part about their wealth. So I think part of why my style resonated for them so much is that I could photograph them. For example, one of my photography clients would never want a portrait of them to their family sitting on a sprawling lawn with the mansion on the hill in the background. Right? That would be garish to them. They would never want that. Well, what I did is I'm able to photograph them in their homes and show just a piece of a detail, whether it's the right style lamp or whether it's the architecture of a column. And you would understand this is a very affluent family by the styling going on around them and, of course, their own manner of dress. So you would get the story without being garish about it. And that was my formula, if you will, as a photographer, and how to capture the lifestyle of affluent people and maintain their need and desire to be dignified about it. They're not a showy group of people.
I love that. So I want to talk about your book, Lingo, Discover Your Ideal Customer's Secret Language. And I think we're tiptoeing around this, but what is the secret language?
Yeah. So
Don't tell it's a secret.
Yeah, I can't tell you. It's a secret. You have to read the book. No, okay. So what happened to me, and this is the story, and again, this is another cross connection between photography and branding. The story that the book is prefaced on, in fact, it was telling this story to someone who turned out to be the editor of my book. I was at a writer's retreat and I told her the story, having no intention of this becoming a book. And she looked at me, she goes, "You must write that as a book."
Mm-hmm.
I think the ultimate irony is that it's more relevant today than it was 34 years ago when this story happened, or 31 years ago. So I was 3 years into my business as a photographer, trying to get this business off the ground in my hometown and failing. It was never going to happen because I was completely mismatched with the clientele. Not only did they not have the money, we didn't share values. They didn't see value in what I was trying to present. So I had this idea. I realized that my ideal clients are people with discretionary income. So I went to, you guys will be familiar with it, I went to Bergdorf Goodman in New York City.
Yep. Oh, well.
As a place to study. Now, for any listeners that aren't familiar with Bergdorf, Bergdorf's is a one-of-a-kind exclusive department store on Fifth Avenue in New York City. Right. So what I've always been to try, I've actually taken video of outside the store watching the hundreds of thousands of people walk by it every day and don't even know it's there. Right. Because it's
or
not
give
for
a
everybody.
Shit. Or give a shit that it's there. Right. Because right. they can't afford it. And second of all, they're busy doing other things.
Yeah. But let's face it, the store is designed very, very small segment of society.
Correct.
So, which is, of course, the society I wanted to reach. So I went there as a study to understand what affluent people needed to see, hear, and feel in order to, why did they choose this brand and how could I get them to choose me? Like, what are the emotional triggers that they're experiencing? So when I was in the store, I was 23 years old. I had $20. That's all I had to spend. The only thing I could find in Bergdorf, you can imagine how challenging it is to find anything for $20 in Bergdorf.
Well,
Goodman.
It was like 50 years ago when you were 20. So,
well, geez.
Man, I really can't imagine. I can't imagine you could find something there for $20.
I did. It was a tiny. Now this is 1987, right? So, it was a tiny votive candle, like really, really tiny votive candle. Not even in a holder. I don't think it was just like the candle that you would put in a votive holder, right? But I asked for it to be gift wrapped because I at least knew enough already that presentation had a lot to do with how
exactly
expensive it looked. Right. So I go to have it gift wrapped, and this woman, the woman of the gift wrap department, is wrapping this candle in wads and wads of tissue paper. She goes to put it into the silver metallic box for which Bergdorf is known for. And then she stops and she looked up at me and she said, "Don't use any tape." I thought that was the oddest thing. Like, why can't I use any tape? But then she explained to me. She said, I asked her, "Why can't I use tape?" And she said, "Well, this clientele is very particular. So before they give it as a gift, they're going to untie the bow, take off the box top, fold back the tissue paper, make sure the candle's in perfect shape because it would be embarrassing to give a broken candle, and then refold the tissue paper, put the box top back, and retie the ribbon. If you use tape, you wouldn't be able to do that." That's the secret line. My light bulbs went off. It's like, oh my gosh, there's like a secret language in the world. Like, this brand knows their customers so well. They know the portrait of their customers so well that they know the behavior of this customer outside the store. And the fact of the matter is, to the customer, if they got something with tape on it, they would feel like, well, this store doesn't really get me. They're not used to serving the affluent clientele. So it literally is a secret language.
By the way, I've done that. Like, I totally take off the top. I make sure it looks perfect. And then I put it back just so I know before I give something.
Right. So it's that. And then I just start unpacking what that meant and realize every market has a secret language. Walmart has a secret language, right? They're completely cost conscious. And everything they do speaks the language of cost consciousness. Rollback pricing. We want to, you know, everything's down price to the 100th of a cent. So they're speaking the language of cost consciousness. Target has a secret language, the secret language of value, right? Target shoppers will spend money. They just want to feel like they're getting more for the money they're spending.
Yeah.
So how can our diehards figure out their customers' secret language?
Yeah. You know, first of all, you have to, there's a common phrase in business, which is to work on your business more than in it. Okay. Great advice. for in a lot of ways. But I think the more important thing for any business is to work outside of their business more than on it. Meaning, you absolutely have to. And I lay out 5 steps in my book about how to build a brand that speaks the secret language of your ideal customer. Step number one is perspective. You have to understand the perspective of the people you're serving without judgment, without assumption. Like, you don't know the people you're serving as well as you think you do. And you need to walk 10 miles in their shoes if that's what it takes. And, you know, I get to walk in heels if that's what it takes. But you have to get into their perspective to understand the values. Like, what? So, for example, what, you know, do you understand? Do your customers value time or money? Right? Great question to ask yourself, because a lot of people assume their customers value money. It's like, yeah, if that's true, then why will most of us pay more money for something that's going to save us time? And we will give money to time is always my priority. So I'm more likely to hire someone for a service that is going to save me time, even if it requires a little extra money. And I think a lot of us, to determine the link, what do you want to speak to? You have to understand, what do your clients most value? What do your ideal customers value most?
That's interesting. Can the secret language be a spoken language?
It can be. It's, because I named the book Lingo, a lot of people have combined lingo jargon, right? So there's a jargon to lingo. Like, industries have jargons, right? The difference is, a jargon is a shared language amongst an industry or a culture. The way I define lingo is, ironically, to truly speak someone's lingo is to speak to their unspoken emotions. Right? So when you're speaking someone's lingo, is that innate feeling that, man, this person gets me, right? It's like the friend that you don't see for 10 years, but you see each other and it's like you didn't skip a beat.
Yep.
Why? It's because you just speak one another's lingo.
Without saying a word.
Without saying a word. And businesses can do this too. Businesses can create a brand that speaks so specifically the lingo of your ideal customers that there's a synchronicity. You just feel like you get each other. That's the difference between lingo and jargon.
You know, it's funny. Not funny, but it's interesting. I had a best friend growing up, and when his father died, I just went over to his house and sat there. Never said a word.
Yep.
And when my father died, he did the same thing.
Yep.
And you don't, just like presence is more important than lingo.
Yeah, you just get, or lingo is more important than jargon, right? You just really get each other, mm-hmm. right? It's just an innate feeling that you understand each other. Like, for my clientele, you know, they would call, they would contact me, they would ask me to create beautiful family portraits for them. They would want portraits of the wall. They would want portraits for holiday cards to mail to their 1,000 friends. I always heard, and in my book, I talk about the difference between the acknowledged need and deeper need. So that's people's acknowledged need, because we only know to ask for our acknowledged need. But when you truly understand your customers, you understand their lingo, you're speaking their lingo, you actually understand their deeper need that they don't know to ask for. So for example, my customers, my photography customers, their deeper need is from me to help them be responsible parents. They're never going to ask for that. In 34 years, no one has ever contacted me and said, can you help me be a responsible parent? But I know that that's actually the most important thing to them, because when you have money, money's not an excuse, mm-hmm. right? I'm the youngest of 3 boys. There's one photograph of my entire childhood. That's not uncommon in middle America and lower middle America, right? Because as we have more and more children, we run out of money, we run out of time. Right. But when you're affluent, that's not an excuse. You can't send 2 of your kids to Ivy League school and 1 to community college. So they're in the same way as their photographer. I had to make sure that all their kids were photographed at the same age, that there were the same number of photographs on display of each child, because they would, as a parent, they would never want to address the question from one of their children, do you love Johnny more than me? Because money's not an excuse. So it's never something, and it's right to the point. Like, I would contact my clients to remind them when to photograph their kids. I would contact them when it's time to do their holiday card, so that they can get their holiday card mailed out the day after Thanksgiving, which is important. That to them makes them look really responsible. To speak someone's lingo is to know so well. Think about marriages and relationships, right? To really speak someone's lingo is to know them so well that you know what they need that they don't know to ask for. And when a business can do that, that's magic.
Now you're talking diehards. What can you deliver to your customers that they don't know to ask for? That is huge.
It's, like I said, it works in our personal relationships, right? I mean, and for anybody that's listening, have either of you ever read the book, The Five Love Languages?
No, not yet. I own it.
Yeah, I own it too.
Yeah.
Right now I speak fluent whatever you want.
Right. It's, you know, it's written for personal reasons, personal relationships, but there's a connection to it, right? I mean, I think it's the same thing. Like, we can't speak the separate love language for every one of our customers, but the fact of the matter is our ideal customers, in my case, they were affluent families, but whoever your ideal customer is, the culture of your customers has a secret language and has a love language, the way that they like to be spoken to. And to your point, there's nothing more powerful than figuring out what your ideal customers want that they don't need to ask for, and that you deliver in a way to them that they're getting what they most need, and it's just moving them. And I mean, they're never going to leave you. That's how you build a loyal clientele.
Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
So I'm going to give you an example and you can tell me I'm full of shit. I wrote a column on a guy walks into a hardware store and says, I need a drill. And the store clerk will say, they're right over here. Do you want to see what's on sale? What he should say is, no, sir, you don't need a drill. You want a hole.
Yeah.
And then I want to know what's going to go in the hole and how is that going to affect what my home looks like. And am I doing this to impress my kids or my wife or my neighbors?
Yeah.
Because if I find that deeper thing out, the guy's going to go, no, I just want a drill. No, dude, you want the best.
Yeah.
And that person will then pay anything for that drill because you know what he's talking about.
I love that you use that as an example. I was actually asked to speak at a conference of hardware store owners a few months ago. And I wasn't sure if it was a fit for me because I'm literally the least handy person you will ever meet in your life.
You should have called me. Yeah.
Well, I'm probably less handy.
Yeah,
I'm lucky if I know the right end of the drill.
I'm one of the few Jews that can swing a hammer, right?
Exactly.
So I totally get that part.
So when they asked me, I'm like, I don't know. But here's the thing. This is when I got interested in it. Is I said, well, let me see what's going on in the world of hardware stores. And I went to countless hardware store websites and found every single hardware store is selling grass seed by showing a picture of the bag of grass seed.
Yeah.
So in making my proposal to this event planner, I took one of those pictures offline and then I went and found one of my own photographs of three little barefoot kids playing on a beautiful lawn. And I put them side by side. I said, now, which is going to sell more grass seed?
Right.
The picture of a bag of grass seed or every parent's dream, the deeper need of having a beautiful lawn for their kids to play on?
Mm-hmm.
And why is every hardware store trying to sell grass with a picture of a bag of grass seed? It's completely uninspiring.
So diehards, what we're talking about here is outcome, not simply product. What happens after the customer buys the bag of grass seed? That's the picture that you need to paint and show. What happens after they take ownership? What happens after they become a customer? That's what lingo is all about.
And telling it through a visual story.
Yeah.
Because you're so visual with your branding and all that. I love it.
Isn't it amazing how people get stuck in their own shit and they can't see?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I truly believe that, and I'm not saying it's just because I'm a brand consultant, but I truly believe that you can't do your own branding.
Mm-hmm.
You can't because you're too
stuck.
Close to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right in front of you. And we often can't see So one of the exercises I do with my clients, and sometimes even with audiences on from a stage, I'll ask them, I'll suggest that they make a list of compliments that they've heard throughout their life and pay particular attention to compliments that you've heard repeatedly that you just want to brush off. Right? Because it's likely that's the compliment that actually has the most value. And it's so easy and natural to who you are, you can't see the value in it. It's really hard to see what's in front of us. This is kind of sort of like the classic shoemaker's kids, right?
You're right, no shoes.
Right. It's impossible to do your own branding. I don't believe you're bringing out your best if you're trying to figure out what your best is on your own. I actually did a TEDx talk on a very similar topic here that my TEDx talk was about how do you exceed your expectations? Because expectations by nature, by definition, are a predetermined outcome. No matter how big how much you expect of yourself, you've already predetermined what you think you're capable of. How do you go beyond that? And so this is the nature of my TEDx talk. And I framed around the fact the only way to get out of that is to surround yourself with people who see more in you than you see in yourself and believe them.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah,
I
that's
like
totally
that a
cool.
Lot.
I want to go back to one of the things that you talked about when you were in your hometown and you had to get out of there because it wasn't the place where you could succeed. The people in the place where you grew up had a mentality of 3 8x10s and some wallets. And they wanted to know how many photographs they were going to get for their money rather than what was the how were they going to picture the photograph? How were you going to place the photograph? What were you going to do to create an image and a lifetime memory?
And what are people going to think when they see this photograph?
Right. What are they going to think? What are they going to say? What are they going to do?
Yeah. So, Jeff, I'll give you an exact example. So I was coaching a photographer who specialized in photographing high school seniors, which are typically girls, some boys, but mainly high school girls have their portrait done. Now, mom is going to pay the bill, but the girl is the one that will decide which photographer gets hired, right? So this photographer I was coaching, when I looked at her packages, they were all what we're used to seeing. You know, package A, you get an 11x14, 3 8x10s, 5 5x7s, and a bunch of wallets, right? So they were and I said to her, do you understand that only matters to mom? The girl couldn't care less about whether there's enough photographs for grandma and the godmother and all that. What the girl cares about is how many different sides of her personality can she show, right? How many different hairstyles and outfits? So we restructured her packages to be a 5-pose package, a 3-pose package, a 1-pose package, right? And the number of poses equated the number of photographs that you would get. But by shifting the mentality towards the real decision maker here is the teenage girl.
Mm-hmm.
And what she cares about is how many different sides of her personality can she show? How many outfits and hairstyles and locations? That's
totally
what changed this photographer's business, was focusing on what the emotional driver was for the primary decision maker, which in this case was the daughter, even though the mother's paying for it.
That's
emotional
phenomenal.
Driver, I think, is key to what you're talking about.
Yeah, I refer to them as emotional triggers. And that's why the strategy I teach in Lingo is based on 5 emotional triggers. And
what
you lay
they?
Them out in steps. Yeah.
Will you share them?
Sure.
All right. What are they?
So step number one is perspective. You have to understand, as we were saying before, the perspective of the people you're going to serve and speak their lingo. Number two, which I think is the most powerful emotional trigger, is familiarity. Right, we're familiar to certain things. Right, familiarity creates comfort and it stands out. You can't unsee a Starbucks logo because it's so familiar to us. As well as, why is there comfort food? Well, comfort food exists because of a feeling of familiarity. So you want to recapture what feels familiar to the world in which your customers are spending their life in. The third is style. Style is the instant decision maker. Right, so in order to attract your ideal customers, especially in today's noisy world, you have to make it easy for them to choose you because the style of your business, the style of your humor, the style of your visuals resonates for your ideal customer. If your ideal customers are super traditional, you don't want to have a contemporary style.
And is distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And distinctive, right. But just like comedians, right? Comedians have different styles. Most are really foul-mouthed today, but that's not for everybody.
Really?
So what's the style?
Really?
Yeah, you're just a heartbeat away. And then the fourth step is pricing psychology, right? You can't, if you're going to price yourself like Walmart, the affluent clientele is not going to see that you're for them.
Mm-hmm.
right? Because the high end prices are rounded off, they're vague, you know, everything's just rounded off and whole. This is same because pricing creates perception. And when you see something priced down to the penny, you get a perception. In the same way that if you go to a restaurant that doesn't have prices on the menu, you get a different perception.
Correct.
Right? So pricing is powerful in how you can place yourself anywhere in the market based on the pricing psychology. And then the fifth emoji, are the words that you apply. Right? How do you speak to them? Are you using the words that are meaningful to them? If you're reaching a high-end clientele, you don't want to talk about discount. You want to talk about upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But in the lower end, you want to talk about discount. But here's the key thing, if you haven't noticed, and I make this very clear in the book, those are the five steps that must be done in order to actually shift your business to speak the lingo of your ideal customers, and they must be done in order. And if you notice, words is last, because what almost every business does wrong is they go into business, they launch a website, they fill it up with words, and then they wonder why they're not attracting their ideal customer. It's because you haven't taken the time to know their perspective, what feels familiar, what looks the style that resonates with them, and priced accordingly. Most businesses are built backwards, unfortunately.
What I found is when I talk to a group of salespeople and I ask them what their biggest barrier is, they're always going to say price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's never price.
No,
or almost never price.
It's easy
when
to
I work
blame
with companies. You know, I love to work with companies and get the marketing and sales teams to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Because man, in so many companies, those two departments are not in sync with one another. And I think the biggest problem is the marketing team is not getting the ideal customers in front of the sales team. If you get the right customers, if the marketing attracts your ideal customers, you get the ideal customers in front of the sales team almost has nothing to do. They're already aligned.
Right, correct. Exactly.
They can ask a few questions. They don't have to make a pitch.
You're just confirming. People are showing up. When your marketing is speaking the lingo of your ideal customers, they are literally showing up 80% sold.
Cool. Yeah,
I agree with that.
This is phenomenal. Everyone should go out and buy a copy of your book. We're going to link to it in the show notes for sure.
Thank you.
Your lingo book is creating its own meme. I think that you're trying to convey a message to people that are actually conveying an opposite message.
Yeah.
And if they would simply sit down and wear the customer's boots or high heels, they would create an understanding that they currently do not have.
Absolutely. Create a portrait, not a snapshot.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's the title of our episode.
Yeah. And you will be a hero to about 100,000 people, hopefully a few of which have money and will buy a book.
Hey, the book's $18.95. It's not going to break their bank.
That's true. Did we get our autographed copy?
No, we didn't.
I will send you one, of
all
course.
All right. We need our own, but make sure you sign it.
Most definitely.
All right, cool.
If they're not signed, we send them back.
I have to have it sitting right here.
Oh, cool.
It looks great.
Let me see the cover again. Cool.
That's great.
That's totally cool.
And then you know what the coolest thing about the cover is, and this is the advantage of self-publishing. You can't really tell on the computer, but there's all these words in the background.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
My three kids' names are embedded in those words.
Cool.
Oh.
Yeah, that's totally cool.
Those are the things you can do when you self-publish. You know, you can do things that are meaningful to you.
I would recommend that you, now that you have the book, that you seek a publisher.
Perhaps. The reason I self-published it is I wanted control of the timing. Mm-hmm. And the publishers weren't willing to put it out to 2019. I wrote it in 2017. It came out a year ago. It came out January 30th of 2018. It wouldn't have gotten out till 2019. And I think this is a message that needs to be heard and heard quick. And I didn't want to wait. I did it myself.
I respect that.
Yeah. I totally respect that.
Well, hey, this has been awesome. Thank you for coming on our show.
Yeah, we'll go for sushi samba when we come down to Miami.
Please do. I'll take you for better sushi.
Yeah, please.
Jeffrey doesn't actually eat sushi.
No, I like their ceviche.
That's the word.
Yeah. Ceviche,
oh, my God. I was like trying to find
it. It's actually two words, but okay.
Yeah. Jeffrey doesn't actually eat sushi, but I do. So I would love a better sushi place.
Yeah, well. You hit me up when you come down, and I'll take good care of you.
We will. Thanks.
Thanks.
So
we can
much.
Fight over the check. Also, you could win. So that was lingo, And I thought that was as good a lingo as we've had on our podcast in a long time. I thought that guy was a linguist.
He had smart things to say and new things to say, or new ways of saying things in which we haven't heard in a while.
True, especially something like your acknowledged need and your deeper need.
Mm-hmm.
That was profound. And for you diehards out there, every one of your customers will tell you what they think they need, but there may be a deeper reason why they want to buy it.
So I don't know where I've heard this before, and I don't want to steal this from someone if it's someone's quote, but I was thinking about sell them what they want, but you have to give them what they need. And that's exactly what he was talking about. Like, sell them the photograph package that they want, but then give them what they need by calling them and reminding them, you know, your son's turning four and you took photos of your other three sons at four, so we better take those photos, you know? And so it's that responsibility reminder that they want.
And I think he portrayed it as well as he possibly could by saying they don't want a bag of seeds, they want a lawn.
Yeah, that was a good visual for sure.
Huge. Everyone can see that, even if you live in a condo. I think that there's the whole secret language thing was just absolutely amazing, and it was insightful. So I'd want to throw something at you, diehards. When your customer – when you create a message to that customer, what do you want them to think – what do you want them to say, and what do you want them to do? I snuck that in there and really quickly, mm-hmm. but I wanted to go back and repeat it because what do you want them to say versus what are they saying now? Are they saying, I'm not interested? Are they saying we already have a supplier? Mm-hmm. What are they saying? What do you want them to think? Like, this guy's a jerk. Why is he wasting my time? And what do you want them to do? What you want them to do is buy.
So this is sort of like interesting. I've shopped at Bergdorf Goodman before. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite stores.
Mm-hmm.
And when he told that story about, you know, he bought the candle, he got it gift wrapped, they didn't put the tape on it, blah, blah, blah. And then he thought to ask, like, why no tape? You know, I've got so many things there gift wrapped before. I never thought to ask why no gift wrap, why no tape? Because I always open the box if it's a gift, and I always double check and make sure it looks perfect. And maybe that's because I'm anal. I don't know, whatever. But it could have shifted.
Wait, maybe?
It could shift on your way home, and you want it to look perfect, okay? And
like it's a pizza or something.
Yeah, right.
Okay, and so, like, they do know their customer. Like, how did they even figure out, like, well, someone's going to go home and they're going to unbox this to make sure it's perfect. And did customers come back and did they tell them, like, don't put tape on it. I don't want tape because then I can't open it myself. It messes up the box. You know, like, I can't tell you how many other stores I've been to where I have to, like, go around the tape and then tape right over the tape to make it look perfect because I need to open it to make sure it looks great inside and they don't get me, right? But so how do you figure out that level of detail with your clients? That's the key, is like they either got feedback from their clients about that little detail or they somehow walked a mile in their shoes. And mm-hmm. diehards, that's what you need to do. You need to know that level of detail that they don't actually want the tape.
There's an incredible opportunity for you as diehards to pay closer attention to outcome and desired results rather than product pitch and price.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you spend more time on outcome and desired results, you'll get the customer to create the vision for themselves of ownership. And that's everything when you're making the sales pitch.
And here's the other thing. Like Bergdorf Goodman has one type of ideal client. They have like a very specific person that they know will know what's inside that store and want to shop in that store and come back and spend more.
Can I describe
there.
Them?
Sure.
Women with expensive pocketbooks.
Who are anal retentive.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So you just described me. but okay. So, but they have an ideal client. And what I find in my coaching and other stuff is like some salespeople are trying to be everything to everyone. You cannot possibly speak every single person's language. You have to figure out who your ideal client is. And we didn't even talk about that, but that's the very foundation of this. If you're going to have that secret language with your client mm-hmm. and be able to be so inside their head to know that they don't want you to tape up the box. Like, you need to speak to that same person every day. Like, you need to know who your ideal client is, and you need to identify them, and you cannot try to sell everything to everyone.
You need to know your ideal client, but you also need to know what do they really want and how can I deliver that to them in a way where they're so grateful for it, they tell somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I'm at risk of doing this. Jen and I are going to be married. In order to become married, you need an engagement ring. We went to Cartier in New York City to acquire this ring. Mm. And when we were done making the acquisition of the ring, and it wasn't the most expensive ring that they had by far, but they brought champagne in.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. Can I back up for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. So they put us in a private room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They're serving coffee and kissing ass.
They gave us coffee. They asked if we wanted wine, which we didn't want. We got some water. We got some sparkling water. We had some little snacks. And then as soon as we were like comfortable and relaxed, then they walked us around the store.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Then Jeffrey didn't want to walk around the store because he didn't want to influence my ring decision. So I chose three. Mm-hmm. That I liked the best. But there was really only one that I really wanted. And I brought them back to this private room that Jeffrey was sitting in the whole time, just hanging out, right? Mm-hmm. Chilling, working, whatever. And I presented them on a little, a board, whatever those things are. And you, thankfully, chose the exact one I wanted.
Phew. Oh, my God. Maybe that's why they brought the champagne out.
And then they said, we have special champagne that we do not sell. We only give it to couples when they get engaged. Yeah. Could we give you a bottle?
Yeah. Does the cat have an ass? Of course.
Yeah, you can give us a bottle. Right.
Like, ask questions that you know the customer will say, of course.
But here's the deal. They celebrated our event and the purchase at the same time. And we'll recommend that anybody you'll overpay a little bit, but you know what? It's a lifelong thing. It's not like
they created the environment, like Jeffrey Shaw was talking about, and they created the experience that made it memorable.
So, listen, that's a great story, great lesson. But what you've really given is a great New York hack to get a free cup of coffee or a free glass of wine.
Exactly. Yeah, you could say you're interested.
You
go, never mind. Meanwhile, you've already had cookies and candy. That's hysterical. I want to know, how do you celebrate your customers? That's the question on the floor, diehards. And do you celebrate like high five because you just made a big sale with other salespeople? Or do you celebrate their decision?
In their language. Yeah. Are you speaking their secret language? That's the key.
Let us know on the Sell or Die Facebook group, Sell or Die Hards.
Yep.
Official group.
We would to know how you celebrate the customer's purchase.
You know, that's pretty cool, actually. Our Facebook group is growing so significantly. Just yesterday.
We got three more.
I allowed in 20 new people.
Whoa.
By allow, I mean, you know, you have to fill out a little questions about who you are, what you're hoping for, that kind of thing. And it gives us good intel about what we can talk about or what you want us to talk about on the show. So we want to make these shows as relevant to you and speak your language as much as we possibly can. All you need to do is join the Facebook group and tell us what you want us to talk about.
It's Sell or Die Hard.
It's the Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
Yeah, if you search Sell or Die, it will pop up on Facebook.
So I'm going to leave you with this thought. We're checking out of here right now for this particular issue. But you're going to want, like, what did he say when we started this? I'm going to tell you exactly what I said. You have to understand there's a huge difference between the customer's acknowledged need, which is what they tell you, and what their deeper need is, which may be their hidden need. If you can uncover both of those, not only is the sale yours, the relationship is yours. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Die Hards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, Tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.